This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 442, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like...
Here she comes, just like an angel. Seems like forever that she's been on my mind, but nothing has changed. She thinks I'm a waste of her time. There she goes, no, she don't know what she's missing. Can't she see I'm never...
Hello, humanity. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 442. My name is Paul Montgomery. That's Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
That's Josh Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
We are iFanboy, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book that they read, call that the Pick of the Week, and we talk about it on this show. It's a way to talk about our feelings, sort of a...
It's a therapy session.
The backdoor way of talking about our emotions. Before we get to the show, quick reminder / warning, this is a review show and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books in addition to our lives. So if you're worried about spoilers, just pause the show now and come back later when you're ready to join us for this healing experience. This week, Connor had the pick.
You put your hands on me, Paul, and then heal me?
Put my hand on the screen. Send good vibes to you, my friend.
This was an unusual week in that the publisher for which I had the most books was Image.
I read one Marvel book.
And I don't think that's happened since 1994, or I don't know when that last time that happened, but it was very unusual.
Where most of the things are from Image?
Where the majority. Like, I had 7 or 8 Image books.
I feel like that's happened to me a few times, but...
Well, but you're not me, Paul. I'm
okay,
saying for me, that hasn't happened in
so
a while.
So what is usually the majority? Is just anything else, or...
Marvel or DC is usually the majority of the books.
Mm-hmm.
I usually get a couple of Image books, but this week it was like 8 or 7, and it was a lot. They were great, but anyway, it was just unusual. And even with all those Image books that were all pretty great, the Pick of the Week of Superman number 32, the first issue by new creative team Jeff Johns, John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, Laura Martin, Sal Cipriani. It's going to be a recurring theme for this episode, but someone clearly misses the old DC universe. And that really comes through in the Superman issue, I think, because Jeff Johns is taking elements of the New 52, he's not straying. In fact, they even colored in the red trunks, which was in the preview pages on that Superman newspaper page in the background. But he's bringing back the dynamic of the old DC universe in that, you know, Clark Kent is sort of back of the Daily Planet, and we've got Perry White, and we've got Jimmy Olsen, and I'm sure we'll have Lois Lane and whoever and all the other gang at the office.
We saw Lois briefly, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that I was thinking, I was like, this is Jeff Johns doing his thing that he used to do, which was to take it all back down to ground, basically. And I thought it was funny because he was sort of an architect of the New 52, and now he's let's go back. Let's, you know.
So it's interesting.
Plug on Clark Capropoulos.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just leave the website with your name in it, but or can you? But
sure you can.
it's interesting, and we'll get into this more later on. It's hard to talk about it without, because there are things we know about, the things behind the scenes that we can't talk about. But clearly someone is trying to bleed the edges of these two things back together a little bit, as much as he can in this story. But this was noteworthy also because this is John Romita Jr.'s either first DC work or first major DC work. I'm not entirely sure if he's never done anything for DC. I'm not going to put a stake in the ground.
It feels like not. But maybe there was a thing.
He could have done a pinup, but who knows?
This,
but
this feels a lot like, you know, like Kirby goes to DC, because he's
absolutely
very, you know, he's a Marvel guy. His dad was a Marvel guy.
This is mom. Everybody. I mean, Romita is sort of a synonymous with Marvel, and he sort of felt neglected. It doesn't really fit into the new Marvel, and so he is here now doing Superman. And I thought it was a bit of a tour de force from him in this issue. I mean, we're all.
Yeah.
Romita fans. I know he's very polarizing in the modern audience, but I think he's the quintessential superhero artist. Now he's doing the quintessential superhero. And I'm looking right now at that double page spread with Superman punching the giant mechanical gorilla. And I'm just like, fuck, man, that is a.
That's the stuff.
That's a great shot. And he brings it in an issue that is a lot of talking heads and, you know, not a lot of superhero action. He's still.
He's not bad at that. I mean, the last major thing that I remember from Romita, not talking about Kick-Ass, because Kick-Ass was generally, I didn't really read all of it, but like it was, the art was great all the way through. I don't think anyone, like it was really good top form Romita. Then the last thing I remember is he was on the Avengers stuff, and it never quite clicked because he had to put 15 heads into every panel,
right.
And yeah. It was weird. But yeah, I felt the same way. And also, I mean, Klaus Janson was inking him, and he's Klaus Janson,
right?
He did so that's Cap, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
That was the first one.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, I came out of this just thinking, wow, like A, it's good to see Geoff Johns again. And I know that, I'm sorry, but that's what it felt like, because I feel like I haven't read Geoff Johns like this in a while. And it was really fun to see a thing that fits John Romita really well. I think there are a couple of places he had trouble with the face, and I think the cover is terrible. Like the cover is just.
It's a bizarre cover.
It's just so not interesting.
Yeah.
Like it's.
Well, I mean, it's a take on the old image. There's that old, you know, it's a famous Superman.
I get
that. But it's a little weird.
It's
especially if you only see the cover, not the full shot, the full gatefold. It's a little bizarre, but.
It looks like they blew up an image that wasn't supposed to be made for a cover and put it there. It doesn't say anything or do anything. It's not particularly dynamic or good. I remember once. Reading somewhere, it's like when I was first making some comics, somebody gave me the note once for art, like, if you're going to show somebody running, show their feet. I'm just like, it's cropped uninterestingly. But besides that, there's no more criticism I have for it. I thought it was a really well drawn and set up issue.
You're right that it felt very much like the old Johns that we haven't seen in a while. Felt very much like that Justice Society era, that Action
Comics stripped down guy. That one who got to the core of what these characters were and didn't overdo it.
Paul, what did you think?
Well, that was all right start. I think I need a few more issues to sort of get my footing in this and understand exactly what he's doing. But I think it's certainly an interesting premise. I like the idea of this, you know, this Ulysses thing and you know, another orphan child sent into, you know, another realm. This time he's from Earth. And being sent to with the fourth dimension, right, and raised there and coming and realizing that, you know, by the end that he's not alone. And I'm kind of interested to see if we're going to get a whole lot of background from him. And I hope it just doesn't turn into kind of a one-note, you know, anti-Superman kind of.
It's sort of archetype. Similar to the Scott Snyder, Jim Lee story.
Superman and Unchained, yeah. It's It is pretty similar to that, but I don't know. At least, you know, we're starting out where he looks like he's a hero and not a scary.
He looks like he's in Nelson.
And so it looks
like. Thought about Nelson in 10 years.
I was like, I don't know if that one's going to land.
So I hope he doesn't just, you know, turn out to be like flip a switch and suddenly he's, you know, the evil kind of character.
Well, there's certainly interesting things to explore in this scenario where you have this mirror Superman who, as Paul said, he was a kid who was sent away from Earth because his parents' laboratory was going to explode because science is always causing problems like
strange matter.
And so they, in order to save the kid, they send him through this dimensional portal before the explosions, and then he shows up again here, having grown up in this other dimension, being told that his homeland was dead, and it's not, clearly. I also really, I mean, Superman is a big part of it, but I also really like Jimmy Olsen, who is a, who's probably the other half of this story. We haven't really had much of the sporting cast, at least in the books I've read. It could have been in the other books, Superman books that I haven't been reading.
He wasn't working at Clark Catropolis.
Right.
There's a problem.
Yeah, it's been all, you know, Superman and Lana Lang lately with Greg Pak stuff, and you know, and Superman's interactions with, you know, Batman is most of what we've been, depending on, you know, what books you've been paying attention to. But
and so here we have a Jimmy Olsen who is ostensibly independently wealthy because his jerk parents left him a bunch of money, but it's there's some legal problems, and I think that's kind of an interesting subplot to look at.
Yeah, because you think of, you know, Jimmy Olsen as, you know, oh gosh, gee whiz kind of character, and to give him a really interesting sort of, you know, family dynamic. I don't know, it's sort of he's kind of like what's his face on ER, you know?
No, it's Carter.
Yeah, it's a, I don't know, maybe there's interesting possibility for him to go that direction, but
setting the tone. Jimmy Olsen very well might set the tone.
You set the tone, pal.
Yeah.
He might wake up with again, a cast on his leg.
After Nelson, how far deep is this? I feel like I'm really not producing for the mass audience anymore. Like every show, you know, like out of 10,000 people or so, five of them are like, yeah.
Did what these go out to people? I thought we were just, you know.
What was Nelson's big hit? I keep wanting
to say More Than Words, but I know that's not it.
That was
Extreme.
That was Extreme, yeah. With, anyway.
Nuno Betancourt.
Josh, as a steak lover... Oh, how did you feel about Clark's cooking his steak with his...
All wrong.
I looked at that scene and I thought, that steak's not going to be at all tasty.
No, and he knows it. He's supposed to be smart.
Like, it's weird. He blasts...
Why is he wearing his hat backwards?
That's what kids do, man.
That's one of the things that I love about John Romita Jr. is that, like, I don't think of him as one of the old guys now, but he kind of is. So, like, his stuff is, like, delightfully antiquated.
It's like Alan Davis.
Yeah, he's like that link between, you know, I always put him on that. He's the continuum between like Kirby and then Walt Simonson, and then like he's the next in that line, and he's still working. And like the action fight scenes, the last sort of third of the book, great, just really really wonderful. But you also get to have those fun like why do you have him dressed like that? I love that.
The girl at the bar with the big jeans.
Yeah. But no, that's the wrong way to cook a steak completely. It doesn't make sense. He should have heated up a piece of metal or something.
Can't live without your love and affection. Is that the song we're looking for?
I can't live without your love. And it sounds like it. I think there was another hit. They're notable now for just being Ricky Nelson's kids, and Ricky Nelson's catalog is a lot more memorable.
Now you've got More Than Words in my head, and I really don't feel good about that.
Yeah. Do you remember when Gary Cherone was the lead singer of Van Halen for a little while?
I do.
Yep.
All right, so I really like Superman 32 a lot. I love Romita. I love Johns. I love the feeling of an old Johns. I like that he is trying to get in as much of the old DCU as he can. And this
I
is
do like that a lot. Yeah.
A subject we're going to come up again in a couple times in this
Screw
episode.
Screw the blog. Work at a newspaper, damn it.
So I would check it out. It's the start of a new arc, start of a new era. If you're a Superman fan, if you're a Romita fan, or if you're a Johns fan, I would say this is very much like old Johns and – so you should have at it.
Classic
Superman 32, pick of the week. Now, did you guys read Outcast number one, the new Robert Kirkman book from Riot Comics? This is the latest book pre-sold to a network. I don't remember which one it is, but Paul Azaceta on
a monster
art.
Hit like that. That's pretty much he could have put anything on a napkin and be like.
Yeah, I hadn't been paying attention and flipped it open and I saw the Paul Azaceta art. Ooh,
yeah, I missed
this
him.
This is nice.
It looked great.
It really did.
This was double-sized issue. You really get a whole lot for your $2.99 in this book.
It was fun. I had no idea what it was or what to expect. I didn't read anything about it. Kirkman's coming out with a new book. I'm going to read that. And Paul, as I said, is an artist who I really, really like. I guess I'm not gonna say I was surprised, but I just didn't know what to expect. And I liked that it was. I was like, huh. I didn't see this coming. Although. It felt like it was at least somewhat similar to Haunt.
That was his other one, right?
Yeah, which was also there was a priest and there was, you know.
I don't remember anything about that book.
It wasn't memorable. This
did
is much,
Capullo
this
is do much, that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Capullo and it was inked by McFarlane and something.
Yeah, no, no, it was, no, like, it was like three styles styles that didn't go together. I remember having this
Otley, Capullo, and McFarlane were all on that.
Yeah. Anyway, this is an exorcism book. This is a book about demonic possession and exorcism, and that was as much as I knew just from reading the trades about the sales of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it. I didn't like love it, but I thought it looked wonderful. I think Paulus has said it's great. And
it was one of those things where I was like, I think this is really good. It's totally not the kind of thing that I would normally want to read, if that makes sense. This is not my genre, but it was good. I like that, you know, he's got the freedom to just really take his time and go through this and sort of very slowly reveal the things about what's going on and who we're looking at. And like at first it was like, this is a little confusing, but you just let him.
Well, you know, what's interesting is one of the things we've said about Image books is that we wish we could get the first two issues together because a lot of them felt like prologues. Here we basically get the two issues together.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, we really get to dive deep into these characters in this world. And so by the end of it, you really feel like you're well established in who these people are, what's going on. And I thought that was really a strong suit of the book.
There's a really interesting twist with, you're led to believe that he had, you know, abused, you know, or beat his young daughter or maybe his wife. And then you find out later that, it was just miscommunication. It was actually his wife was possessed by these demons and was attacking the kid. And then he tried to stop her and in doing so hit her. And so then, you know, there's some interesting dynamics here, like the sister, you know, taking care of him and wanting to bring him out and making him a part of the larger family and meet his niece and everything. But then also her husband is a dick.
He thinks that he's a wife beater abuse. I think
it's understandable too. Like he's like, I don't want that guy around my kid. He beat his own kid. Like, and he's acting all weird. And, you know, so it's kind of understandable, but
this is the story of a town in which demonic possession seems to come part and parcel with your property taxes, in that the main character has been plagued all his life by demons. His wife, his daughter, also was his mother as well.
Yes, that's where it started.
And then so he gets called in by the priest to help with another demonic possession. But I like that he's sort of an outcast.
He's a reverend, actually, not a priest. But
I want to make sure we give credit to Elizabeth Breitweiser's color too. I was just looking through it now and I'm noticing how these colors work together in one of these sort of muted palettes.
She does a really great job with the lighting in this issue, because when you go into the kid who's possessed in the present, when they go into his house, it's like all the windows are boarded up and it's like super dark in there. And it's not just like, you know, they're walking through and it's pitch black and you just, you know, it's a black wash over the panel with like a flashlight going through. It's actually, you know, really muted to the point that it just looks like dim, you know, indoor lighting. And I was really impressed with that.
There's a really nice, I'm trying to figure out, there's like a spread in the middle where he's talking on the porch to the priest and you're looking out over the, like the bare trees, and there's like a mountain and the sun and like that. There's not a ton of ink on that one. That's all sort of looks like it's drawn in color. It's gorgeous.
I like the depiction of the demonic spirit too. Like when it comes out of the kid and it's just hovering there in the, you
like
know,
smoke.
The ceiling. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's the smoke monster from Lost, but
the shadow monster from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, like. Yeah. So it's like, it's, you, and it's darkness within a dark room, but you can still sort of like, what the hell is that? And it's
also Kirkman believes in demonic possession. So that's a thing.
Or, you know, it was possible.
Yeah.
I was a little thrown by that in the little essay in the back, but well, you know, people believe in things. That's fine.
I stopped what I was about to say.
He can believe in whatever he wants.
Yeah, especially now. Sure thing, Mr. Kirkman. Sounds like a good idea. I'll get the priest here right away.
I thought this was really good. I only checked it out because it was a new number one from Kirkman, but I wasn't expecting. But I'm going to definitely read the second issue. I think I'm drawn in enough by the characters. I think the main character is really interesting. And I love the fact that he has to exist in this world where everybody hates him for reasons that are untrue.
Yeah. Once I got to the twist where you find out, oh, it's not him, you know, beating his family. It's the wife. And like the reverend even says, like, your mother and your wife too. And, you know, and then he's like, we got to find out why they're, you know, why they're bothering me. Why is the world of demons being such a dick to me? Like constantly just following me around. And they call him the reason it's called Outcast is his blood apparently is, you know, it's like holy water on a demon or something. Like it's it's what helps him draw the thing out of the little kid. Yeah. It's interesting, yeah.
Speaking of dicks.
Josh, you tweeted out this week that Sex was the most Joe Casey book that Joe Casey's ever written. Yeah. What does that mean?
Specifically, I was listening to the way that if you've ever read a Joe Casey interview, like he doesn't talk like anybody else in comics, or if you've talked to him in real life. And there's a bit at the end where the two twins are sort of talking to each other back and forth. And I was like, that's Joe. That's Joe's interview voice. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all, because it's a very distinct personality and voice.
How do you quantify that? What is the voice like?
It's just, it's a way of speaking. It's like vaguely theatrical. It's a little like excitable. It's a little condescending. It's a little, there's like a touch of, it's like a punk rock Stan Lee kind of thing. If that makes sense.
Punk rock Stan Lee. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like this book is winding up or down towards something. And
it's not though. Did you read the letters column?
No. Well, I read parts of it.
Well, it's interesting because we've discussed this before on this show, and I talked about it with some people who work on the book, is that this is a pure drama book. It's not like there's a story or central story. It's not a central narrative.
Soap opera.
And somebody complains about that in letters column, saying, I don't see where this is going. I don't feel like there's a point we're going to. And he's like, there's not. It's a drama. Sometimes we'll follow this character, sometimes we'll follow this character. And the story will go wherever they tell me to go.
And I love that.
I do too. And I just like it's so obvious, like the continuing comparison of superheroics to sex. Mm-hmm. Like it's just trading the one thing for the other, and like it just shines a different light on this thing that we have all in comics spent so much time reading about and looking at and twisting it a little bit on its side, and this fetish, you know. And how it works in this comic. And I also, another thing occurred to me as I was reading this book is that I feel like if you look at some of the stuff that's going on at Image specifically, a lot of books with a lot of bits in them.
Naked bits.
And I was like, fucking Alan Moore did it again. He did.
I know.
Alan Moore went and set the tone for comics like without meaning to.
Yeah.
And like it's a real thing now. Like he was like, I'm gonna do these weird porno comics that are sort of mainstream, and now it's totally commonplace.
It really is, especially this week with Saga too. But I like that some people have a really hard time with this because it's not a traditional superhero story, so they can't get their grasp on it because it's not. He said even for the trade they had to give it a genre, and they picked drama. That's what it is.
Good on them. That's what's exciting about it, right? I mean, because there's so many, and we've always talked about this with this particular book, and the first issue was a pick of the week. I think it was like the second pick of the week I gave out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a it's a superhero deconstruction, but that's limiting. It's so much more than that because there's so many superhero deconstructions that have gone on since Watchmen, and it seems like they each have one high concept. Or maybe it's a mashup of two, but they basically have one kind of thesis about that they're trying to say about superhero comics. This one feels to me like an ongoing exploration.
I do still feel like it's a bit of a final word on the superhero ethos.
Ongoing thing. It's not like I have this one thing to say about it and it wraps up nicely. It's let's see where this goes.
Also, it's Tomax and Zaymot, basically.
Right. Well, this issue we get the backstory on the twins, the twin characters who are crime bosses in the present, and in the past we find them as thugs or lieutenants in a crime family. And this is
we watch how they
take it over by orchestrating some murders in the middle of their orgy. But I really love this. I love the art. I think that there's a clever way to do. He talks about this also in the letters page. Clever way to use the guest artists to keep it on monthly, mm-hmm. by using them in these flashback sequences. But I like the flashback art quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is a book I get really excited about whenever it comes out.
Who is there another word artist? That you would use?
Chris Peterson. I get really...
I know a guy named Chris Peterson. He used to work at Nickwood.
Chris Peterson is the guest artist. He's really good.
It was good.
We get really hot and bothered.
I get...
Turgid.
Turgidly, my emotions are turgid. turgidly. By the way, it was "Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection," Paul. You were correct. That was the song. That was the big one. That was the big Nelson song. So let's talk about Avengers Undercover number 6. First of all, I'm sad that this book is ending. I think there's only 4 more issues left. But I'm finding that I'm enjoying this as much as I was enjoying Avengers Arena, which if you listen to the show, you know is quite a bit. We talked about it a lot. This is the post-fallout from Avengers Arena in which the kids all went and they escaped Murder Island and they had to deal with the fallout of everybody finding out what happened on Murder Island. And they went and hunted down and killed Arcade. And they decided, well, I guess we're supervillains now. And then they got invited to join the Masters of Evil. And now some of them are doing it as an undercover op. Some of them are not quite sure if they're evil or not.
And Chase is dead.
Well, yeah, that is whatever these days. But
Chase is dead.
In this issue, we really get to explore what it's like day to day to be in the Masters of Evil from Death Lockett's perspective. And I just love the dynamics of this book. I love the exploration of good and evil. I liked the problem of, well, if you're evil, then you're going to shoot Captain America from far away. And Chase is like, well, you can't shoot Captain America. He's a good guy. And I just loved this whole exploration.
Chase saved Captain America's life because Death Lockett was going to snipe him.
Right.
He was going to shoot and he was going to be dead.
I can't believe I've missed this. Like at some point, I just was unaware of what it was. And it was the thing I was looking out for, and now I'm downloading all these.
It's not that much of it, so that's the good news.
I'm going to catch up because I loved Avengers Arena, and I'm blowing it. That's
It's Avengers Arena, but then plus the Zemo,
right? Plus
the Zemo in it.
Good Thunderbolts.
Yeah, I really like the Death Lockett character, and I think that's I like the interesting weird sort of triangle between her and Chase, and who's the shovel guy.
I don't know, but he really is lame. The whole joke is that her boyfriend just all he has. He's like a digger in that movie with Ben Stiller.
Mystery Men.
He all he has is a shovel.
He just has a shovel.
And
he just calls her babe all the time. I was like, man, this guy's so lame.
but it is a really great. I mean, Dennis Hopeless. I don't know why I'm calling him Ben. I don't know who Ben is. Dennis Hopeless, or Ben Stiller, I guess. Dennis Hopeless is really locked in on these characters and locked in on their
really
dilemma.
I'd be impressed if it was Ben Stiller writing this.
See, that's his pen name, is Dennis Hopeless.
I've met no.
That could have been an actor we interviewed. We don't know. We don't know how deep this joke goes. Art by Timothy Green II was really strong too. Not the normal artist, but looked really great. I'll be sad when this ends, but it's been a really
fun
experience.
I like an artist with a number after his name.
Timothy Green 2.
Yeah. Like it's like you're getting second go.
Also, this was like the third version of Captain America's costume I read this week. This is much like Beast. They really haven't figured out how to draw this thing with any kind of consistency.
That tells you something about the design.
Well, it just tells you the more complicated they make these costumes, the harder it is to make them keep them consistent.
Yeah.
And in one of the books I read, he basically had the old costume with his new gloves. But he had the scales.
I think they should just draw them whatever way they want to because, it seems like they're trying to follow this weird complex pattern of like all where the straps go and everything, and just draw Captain America. I don't know.
Anyway, it's really good.
Make him look like how they want him to look on the cover, but I think like the interior is just as long as it's recognizable as Captain America, I'm fine.
That'd be off brand, Paul.
This is going to sound like the crankiest thing that anybody, but it's like Kirby nailed it. They haven't beaten it. Every time they get away from what it was, like there was nothing wrong with it.
Well, DC has that problem. We talked about it before. DC and Marvel's problem is trying to replicate the movie costumes, and DC's problem with making them all those classic looks very complicated is really taken away from the visual aspect of the.
At least I understand why Marvel's doing it. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it in line with the overall image of the things that actually make them money. Whereas DC is just like, the kids will like this. And it's like, it's stupid.
Right, which is evidence.
We didn't mention when we were talking about Superman 32, like the costume, like... is still bad.
It's still terrible.
It's really bad.
It's so terrible that in order to read it, you just have to shut it off. But every time you read one of those DC books, you should know that in the back of my mind, 100% of the time, I think, God, they just look so stupid.
Yeah.
And then I move on from that and judge the book otherwise. But
we're gonna actually talk about that a little bit later. But so trees.
Warren Ellis, Jason Howard.
number one was such a question mark, like as what is this? But it's fascinating. I found it really compelling, but I was like, what is this? Because it's this macro view of this world where there's these weird alien pillars that have sprouted up or landed on different locations throughout the globe. And we follow different groups in different areas, different countries, and they're in the North Pole, right? It's the North Pole.
Yes.
Yeah, polar bears. So, yeah, right.
Are polar bears just in the North?
Yeah.
There are no polar bears in the South?
There's penguins.
It's polar. It's not North Polar Bear.
Damn it. I was really going to try to impress Ryan with this one.
Canada? There are no polar bears in Canada? What about Maine?
I think they're in the North Pole.
There are no polar bears in Maine. No.
How do you know?
Maybe it wasn't a thing. One. Well, they reported on the other kinds of bears frequently, mostly black bears and brown bears.
So the polar bears have a lobby that's very powerful that keeps them out of the media.
Really?
Polar bear lobby.
That's fascinating. They're like the Koch brothers the animal kingdom.
Exactly. Polar bears are from the Arctic Circle. They're not in the Antarctic, so it's the North Pole.
Okay.
And
Maine.
Yes. So it was a question mark. So it was like, what is this book going to be?
Just north of Portland.
This issue, we spend a lot of time in the North Pole. And I like this because I've had some conversations with our buddy Ryan Haupt about the depiction of scientists in various stories. And this felt like scientists to me. Like, they're very into, you know, they're like sort of like narrow focus on their experiments and what they're working on right now, to the point that this guy doesn't want to leave because you should only spend a certain amount of time a year and, you know, in a North Pole research station before you go like stir crazy.
They're petty humans. like they're like the scientist is always the level headed one, you know, like in the story,
right,
rather than black science. But I know what you're saying. That's good.
Well, so I thought it was just an interesting examination of those personalities and when they start getting into like bickering and stuff, mm-hmm, and the stuff that they fight about. And you have the one new scientist who, you know, she ends up there and she's just like, can someone please kill me? Like, why did I sign on for this?
Well, have you ever read about the Antarctic sort of station? Like, it's a weird place. The people, mm-hmm, who end up there are weird. It's, you know, and you're trapped in there. It's like no other. No, we just went through that.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Where are the bears?
I have a question.
I came down here. I was promised bears.
I have a question, Connor. Is this about bears? No question.
Never mind.
I remember a long time ago I was working on a TV show and I had talked to and we brought on a guy who'd worked in the Antarctic station. And also, like, you know, we've read all the stuff from Rucka and Whiteout, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, it's just like they're weird people, or they become weird by being in that. Like,
it takes a special kind of personality, yes, to be able to put up.
Weird in a bad way. I just mean like,
it's,
you know,
typical.
They get
it's
down
like weird,
there.
Like, you have to. You want to talk about comics every week for 10
exactly.
Years. It's also kind of weird.
I own that.
It takes all kinds.
But I mean, I feel like that's in it a little bit. It gets sort of insane, and like, you know, that guy. I remember that guy telling me, he's like, you don't even want to know what people got up to down there because. They were just bored and trapped and, you know, they're in this, I mean, you may as well be under the ocean or in space. It's
right.
Probably made bear suits.
And then one of the other pedantic scientists was like, no!
I discovered the first Antarctic bear.
So I thought this was a Jason Howard tour de force, especially the scenes in, I guess, is that Brazil in the middle or wherever that is? It looked very Fabio Moon and Ba-esque.
Look at this guy's range, man. Look at what he's showing us that we had not seen in the Astounding, man.
I was a little disconnected from the story.
My note on this would probably be that one of the things I really liked about the last one was that it was sort of nonspecific and sort of vague, and we were just going around the world. And as we get – and I know that you kind of have to do this because of the way that the story is, but then they're getting into like, what is this flower? How does it work? Like, I don't care about that so much. I just want to see how this has affected the world.
Right.
Which I think is really interesting.
I got really sort of bored with all the flower talk.
Yep.
And it's not my anti-science. nature. It's just that there was a lot of talk about this poppy, and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on.
Oh, well, maybe next issue we'll get more of the Somalia thing, where you've got this, you know, between two African nations, you have this one tree that they believe is the shorter tree, and it's affecting positively the one nation. And then the other nation, it's not doing much of anything for them, but they're like, we can use this as a stage of some sort, and we can get up there by helicopter, and we have this great observation deck to look down.
Do you think they have bears up there?
There are bears everywhere.
That'd be a poor strategy. I loved the character of the – I really, really enjoyed the character of the Somali leader.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were, you know, like they basically describe him like he's an economic expert and this and that, and he was talking about strategy, like that sort of large view of politics. And I find that really interesting, and I think Warren Ellis obviously has a hell of a head for it.
Yeah.
Much less so than I don't care why the pillars. I don't want to know the mystery of the pillars. That's not as interesting to me. I like the idea that they're just there and you have to deal with them, and they've more or less been inert other than the dumps,
right,
that they take. Great book.
Yeah, I love the ambiguity of it, and I really like the I think it's macro enough in that it looks at all these different places, but then it you know, it's slowly starting to zoom in on different relationships and different things that are going on specifically with the trees, and I can't think of anything all that similar to this out there right now, even though there's a lot of science fiction. I guess the closest thing might be like that Sovereign book, but that's fantasy, but just in the way that it looks at culture.
This is science fiction, though. Like if you were to talk about like the kind of science fiction I'd love to read, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's not just like aliens for aliens' sake, and that's fine. Those stories are fun, but it's real, like hard science fiction, I guess.
Paul, when the aliens do come, they're gonna hear this show and they're gonna go, "So, aliens for aliens' sake, huh, Paul? They're gonna eat you. You're gonna get eaten
by polar bears.
By polar bear aliens.
By polar bear. They'll be playing Nelson.
Find out that polar bears were just early scouts, and their overlords, Gunner and whatever Nelson, are gonna come for you.
Gunner. it's not a lot of Gunners. Really been replaced.
Gunner
by
and Matthew.
By the Liams and the Collins.
Matthew kind of got the short end of the stick on that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Well, maybe they were like, well, one of them, maybe, we'll...
This is Gunner, and this is Matthew.
This is Klaust and Joe.
I want to be Gunner.
So listen, right. I've got kids, I've got bills. We can't do this for free. Come on. No, that's the worst pitch ever. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and if you do that, the things that you buy from Amazon...
You adopt a polar bear on Amazon?
No, check into that while I get through this.
I'm looking.
We'll help support the show. We'll take a little, tiny little wee bit of what you pay Amazon. Doesn't cost you anything extra, and it puts it in our cavernous and echoey coffers. Just imagine like a big room where you hear a water drip. And there's just a small pile of change in the corner. That's us. If you're thinking of Scrooge McDuck, you are way off. We're not even Flynn Hart Glom Gold. So anyway, you can go to Amazon and buy. Well, there you go. You
Gift
can adopt
Republic
one.
Adopt a Polar Bear gift box for $29.99. Some kind of box, I guess, send away. And then you also get a virtual pet polar bear, an app.
Whatever it is that they have to do to send that to you, or the energy they use, that is the thing that is melting the ice that poor polar bear is standing on. And they're just like, stop, just leave us alone.
Bear in the Backseat 2: Adventures of a Wildlife Ranger in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Jeez,
that's not gonna be a polar bear. It's gonna be a grizzly.
Yeah.
So get the Amazon thing covered. You can do that. That would be super helpful. Or you go to ifanboy.com/registration and take the more direct route. You can pledge any amount that you would like if you'd like to donate to the show, this long-suffering program that we do for you, for your enjoyment, for free. We're saying if you want to kick in some because you've got the stuff going on, the economy's recovering, you're like, I appreciate this. You can do that at ifanboy.com/registration. You can sign up for $3 a month or $30 a year if you don't even want to think about it. Just off it goes. That's not a lot. It's less than Sally Struthers wants. Does she still do those? Someone else does those?
I assume. I just hear Santa Claus does it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just hear a voice saying $22 a month. So you could do that, and that is a really great direct way. And of course, we obviously as flippant as we are super thankful to the people who take that route and help support the show. It really makes a big difference, and thank you.
Bear paw meat handler forks. It looks terrifying.
So
like
Batman,
brass knuckles with claws. Sorry, go ahead.
Batman 32. This is the issue where Batman finally confronts the Riddler after being bested at every turn. And I really liked the moment where he walks into the place where he thinks Riddler is, and he shouts out, "Am I right? Am I right?" And I really thought that was a very visceral.
Batman has some rage issues in this
because he's been beaten.
Yeah,
I mean, he can't win against the Riddler, and he's at the end of his rope. If he's wrong here, the city's done for. And I just felt that very viscerally. And he shouted into the darkness, "Am I right?" And then, of course, he is right. And I love the next page where we have a shot through the Riddler's clapping hands.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
That was a little mustache twisty, but not necessarily in a bad way.
Right. I
love the cliffhanger of Batman in a discotheque inside of a replica Sphinx.
Again, I told Scott specifically on that page where he sends the message to Alfred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's my favorite Batman thing that he's written.
Oh wow!
I really love that. I thought it was like super, not superhuman, but very human. Mm-hmm. And it was because this whole time you've just seen Bruce be a dick to Alfred, who constantly takes it. Which is pretty much what we saw in the movies, the recent ones, you know. Mm. And this was the, like, he's finally got to admit, you know, like, yeah, you're right, but here's the thing. It's just a nice bit of humanity and a nice bit of logical sort of conclusions by Batman, who's supposed to be super smart. And sometimes you're like, how come you can't see your nose just by your face? I really like that. That's all.
So next month we have the finale of Zero Year. Should be
wow.
Exciting. Revival. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, I hadn't talked about it in a little while. And, you know, I think last year when we did so 6 months ago when we did our sort of best of the year, I put Revival in my top five. And it's still a really good book. And what was fun about this last issue is like a good part of it takes place in New York City. And I just thought it was cool. It was cool to see how this thing that happens in Wausau, Wisconsin – affected the rest of the world, and good news, it makes New York City people more crazy. it has a real impact on the world at large, and you're watching what's her name? I can't think. Dana. She's there to like look into an investigation that's going on there, and you know, this is the first time we've gotten out of the main spot and seen, you know, how the rest of the world has been affected, and it's been affected in a really big way. But also in the way that, like in Trees, like the world does go on. Mm. Like all of a sudden, the rules of everything you knew have changed, but you still got to go to work on Monday.
That would suck.
Yeah, I mean, like it's. I think that's really, really interesting. I think it was good, and I like this this little relationship with the Johnny Knoxville dead guy that is going on with his sister, and. It was a good issue. I haven't talked about it in a little while, but
so what about people who are like legitimately like sick? And they call in the morning, like, I know you're all at work, even though it's the apocalypse and everything, but I had sniffles.
It's not the apocalypse is coming, everyone must report kind of thing. It's not an all hands meeting kind of thing.
It's not like a bear attack.
No, it's just that if you use, like, say you use one of your PTO or paid time off days, that's going to count against you. Regardless of apocalypse.
You can take a personal day, Paul. You're just not going to be able to take one later on when you just really need it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't know how bad it's going to get. So
right.
You want to save those up. Not so much for vacation because of the end of the world part. But I don't know. I don't know when like your benefits wear out.
You might want to take those days the week after Thanksgiving so you can get that full 11 days off using only 5 vacation days.
Yeah, that's a strong move.
So
that's a strong
keep,
move. But that kind
up.
Of thing.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
So when you continue to bang the drum for Ms. Marvel, number 5, you guys reading this? Or is it me and Connor? Or?
I am.
Okay.
I am good and I know good comics.
I'm not because I'm, I don't know.
It's
dude,
great though. Such a great like all ages comic. And one of the great things that they do here, Wilson and Alfana, Kamala loses like her first superhero battle. And that's a really important milestone for a young superhero. You sort of, you know, she knows that she's loose. She's like, I got to get out of here. And she has to retreat. And then she comes back having learned a lesson and getting a great sort of training montage. And I like that her friend points out that because she has a friend who is aware of, you know, her abilities. And she has sort of a strange power set where her big go-to move sort of, if she was like, you know, a Street Fighter character, would be this giant – she can make her hand huge. She has
a giant fist.
And she just make this hand, and he's like, that's pretty awesome. That's also like kind of gross to look at because it's just weird visual of the giant hand on a regular size arm. And anyway, so then she goes back and she, you know, she rescues this person, and so the mission is completed. But then there's a really great heartfelt scene where she goes home and it's, you know, it's late at night and she's in her weird superhero costume that she's, you know, made herself, and then her mom finds her there and she's like, what are you doing? Why were you out late at night? You're ruining your life. You're going to embarrass this family. And she's just lashing out because she's worried about her daughter. And then dad comes over and tells the story of, you know, why they decided to give her this name, Kamala, which means perfection. And it's really nice, you know, father-daughter kind of moment. And I really love the overall cast of this book. There's this really great
the family's really family. Great. I thought the dad scene where, you know, she comes home late and the dad gives her the talking to was really a great father-daughter scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I thought of you, Josh, when I read it. Even though you don't have girls, it's still a very great father-child discussion. And it feels very true.
Yeah. And it's not just like, you know, mom and dad are pissed and it's a complete like unified front. They understand each other and they, you know, he sort of has to explain to his daughter, like, this is where your mother's coming from. But they each approach their daughter in a different way and like a nuanced way. And I thought that was really cool. And then at the end, we find out that the first big bad is like this giant parakeet kind of character.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was a great design, but it was really funny. I love the art in this book. Mm-hmm. It just did, like, again, nothing looks like this. And it looks – and even if you know Alfana from Runaways, it's a completely different style. But I love the color in it. Again, reading it on the iPad, really beautiful.
We're sick of hearing about your iPad.
I love it. It's so good.
Why don't you tell us about your lake house while you're at it?
Totally changed the way I read comics.
So Justice League 32 continues
with a different device, literally.
I mean, the fallout from Forever Evil, in which Lex Luthor is now seen as a hero. And he has figured out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. The cliffhanger in the last issue was him showing up at Wayne Manor saying, hey, I know you're Batman. And that led to a really, really great opening scene that went 8 pages of Bruce and Lex sort of matching wits about whether or not he's Batman. With a great culmination in which Lex basically says, hey, I guess I got to prove it. So he pulls a gun on him. And then out of nowhere, off panel, comes in Alfred's hand, cocking his own gun to Lex's head.
Nice.
So, you know, because he's always lurking to protect Bruce just in case. And I thought that was a really great moment. And then they have a really – it's Doug Monkey, and they have a really great fight in Wayne Manor and ends up Lex exposing Bruce's Batcave entrance. So he knows he has the proof. He's blackmailing him because he wants on the Justice League. So it was really, really good. I mean, there was other stuff going on too, but that was real for me, the really strong scene. And actually, Paul, I thought of you because – the other hero of Forever Evil was Len Snart, Captain Cold.
Oh, yeah.
And so he is here now getting his interview at LexCorp to join the team. And he's not used to being treated with respect and treated with as a hero. All the security guards want to take their photo with him and get his autograph. He's not used to that kind of attention. And this is a great take on that from a guy, Jeff Johns, who really knows these rogue characters really well. So Captain Cold's really uncomfortable in this new position in the world. And it's just between the Lex Luthor, Bruce Wayne stuff, which is probably 2/3 of the issue, and then the Captain Cold stuff and plus a little bit of Shazam, this really was right up Jeff Johns' alley and a really fun issue. I didn't really care at all for Forever Evil, but I'm enjoying so far the fallout of it and the characters.
How's the depiction of Captain Cold?
It's hard to say because he's so uncomfortable the entire time.
Uh-huh.
You know, so he's not his normal self, but...
Is this the first time he's shown up? No.
No, because he helped Lex save the day in Forever Evil, apparently.
Okay. But, I don't know.
But he's just... This is the first time he shows up at his interview. And actually, there's an interesting little synergy here. We were talking about Marvel earlier. So the rumors in the, for the Batman Superman film is that Mercy was going to be played by an Asian actress, and here she's drawn to be Asian. So clearly that was an accurate. That was an accurate casting news, but I think Paul, maybe you might want to check this one out just to see.
Let's see
what you think.
I miss old 52 Len Snart, and like, I just imagine him like he probably breathes weird, right? You know, like is it the whistly, you know, and it's like he's a close talker, you know.
Like, well, this is a Len Snart, not quite that like that, but he is the Len Snart who is not quite comfortable in his place in the world right now, which is interesting.
Okay. Show again, Stray Bullets, The Killers, number 4. I love
what horrible thing happened this time.
What horrible thing? It's a happy ending. The kid almost.
You're a lie. You lie.
Kid, it was just me now at this point.
I looked through it. I leafed through it.
Okay. It has a happy ending. Was we're following the
too
kids.
Little, too late. Lap him.
The kid.
Lap him. Like, I don't know.
The kid goes into a. After he breaks up with Virginia, the main teenage girl.
Who's murdered? Recently.
Who's into a this abandoned house they've been staying in?
Overdoses and heroin.
He gets high and then he puts a gun to his head, but the safety's on, and Virginia walks in just in time. And
wait, so your happy ending is that he almost shoots himself.
Shoots himself in the head, but the safety's on. She comes in. He's fixed. So he points the gun down and he's removing the safety or you know switching off the safety. And she startles him, so he fires by accident and shoots himself in the foot, but that's okay because he's got a prosthetic foot. And then she comes over and she's like, I missed you. And then, you know, and like, and he throws the gun out the window, which closed.
Which ends up going off and shooting a kid.
Right.
Probably. but it's the end of this particular story, and they're going to he's going to explore another character from the past Stray Bullets in the next arc. I don't know exactly how this works structurally, but this one has a the end ... at the end, and I'm sure we'll revisit Eli and Virginia at some point. But
it's probably an asbestos leak in their house or something. Well, I got cancer.
It was pretty dark. I mean, like his cousin steals his fake leg.
That's pre-touched him.
No, there isn't even a priest.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I am enjoying it. I quite like it.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to ifanboy.com/fuck. I haven't done that in a while. Go to ifanboy.com. You can talk about those books in the comments section of this show. You can also talk about the books we didn't talk about. There's a lot of comics this week. You can go do all that at ifanboy.com. And I just want to point out that although I'm technically getting this in under the wire, I've had this ready to go for a month. We just never really had the opportunity to talk about it. This is the book of the month for June.
Didn't Black I do the June book of the month?
No.
The very beginning of the month?
Yeah.
Did you?
I think this is the July book
of
the month.
Oh, then I'm early.
Yeah, you're early.
This has never happened.
This is great. July book of the month. Black Canary and Zatanna Bloodspell by Paul Dini and Joe Quinones. That's probably wrong, but I apologize. So this is your July book of the month. Getting out of the way.
I think it's pretty, yeah, okay.
And this is a fascinating book for me on many levels. This is an original graphic novel from Paul Dini. And it's interesting, Paul, I know you read this too.
Yes.
Considering how militantly the current DC regime guards the New 52 as what's happening and won't let anything in from the old world. This is a book that takes place completely in the old DCU.
Yes.
And it's not just Black Canary and Zatanna. There's basically cameos by every major DC character in this
classic
book.
Ollie.
Classic Oliver, Batman, Superman, Hal Jordan, Elongated Man, the old Dark Side God. I mean, there's basically everyone makes a cameo. I love
Batman in there?
Probably not, but
Superman's in there for a panel.
I thought Superman's cameo was hilarious.
Yeah, it was great.
I was really surprised that they let this go because for the most part, projects that have been done before the changeover got rewritten or redrawn to fit the new world, and this doesn't do that at all. It just shows you the power of Paul Dini.
Dini power.
In this space to push through this book that takes place in the old world. I thought that was really interesting from a business standpoint. But I also really love these two main characters, Black Canary and Zatanna. You know, Paul Dini has a love of magic and he's a love of Zatanna. She's always showing up in his stuff. But I thought these two play off each other very well as characters. You know, you have one sort of very street level martial arts and very sort of practical character in Black Canary. And then you've got the magician, performer, magic caster in Zatanna. And they don't, their sort of worldviews don't necessarily jive together, mm-hmm. but they work together pretty well. And this is not just an exploration of this story, which is this, there's this magic wielder who casts a spell on Black Canary, and the whole story is about saving her from that spell and then, you know, catching the bad guy. But it also there's tons and tons and tons of flashbacks to their early lives throughout their history. Meeting each other when they were 16 in Nanda Parbat, and then their relationship throughout the years and all the different eras too. So you see the terrible costumes from the 70s and 80s that they wore, the satellite era costumes, the Black Canary's 80s costume.
And you see like three or four different Zatanna costumes. Like you see her in like when she first goes to the Justice League satellite.
Yeah.
And
it's terrible hair.
Different hair, and they remark on that and stuff. It's great.
I just thought this was a great love letter to these characters and to the Justice League itself. It's a romp. You know Paul Dini's style, and it's fully on display here. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of high action and a lot of great character moments too. I mean, there's a lot of time you just get to spend with the characters.
I think Quinones is the perfect choice to draw this.
Yep.
It's just completely got the tone of it. And I mean, even for his usual stuff, I mean, it's not that far off from what he'd normally do, but it's just the exact right match, the exact pairing of creators. And it's just an awesome, like, extended team up story.
Right.
They go to the mall, and I was like, oh, just, you know, there's female characters going to the mall and have like a, you know, girls afternoon or whatever. But it actually contextually makes sense because they go to, a lingerie store to buy fishnet stockings.
Right.
They both wear fishnets. So.
And I also like that they go and they see the Justice League toys that are in the window of the toy store and talk about how they don't get kickbacks from those. Like, there's just a lot of interesting things.
This is interesting. Looking in the back, they have Paul Dini's, I mean, a lot of sketches from Quinones and then Paul Dini's original pitch for it. And then you get the whole script.
Yeah, so you not only really get cool. the whole story, but you get the entire script.
Here's what's interesting. Black Canary Zatanna Blood Spell, written by Paul Dini, revised 2/11/10.
Yeah.
So that's partially why it reflects relationships and, you know, the status quo of the old 52.
Well, I mean, no, obviously, but there have been other projects that have written before the changeover that they were then forced to change again to fit into the world. But
yeah.
He's been talking about this online for years. I've been patiently waiting for his Zatanna OGN, which turned into a Zatanna Black Canary OGN at some point or early on. But,
yeah.
You know, this has been worked on clearly for quite a while. And it's great. I thought it was super fun. And if you're someone who misses the old DCU or these characters, pick this up. They're all here. And there's a new adventure with them.
This is something I would, it's interesting because, you know, we have those conversations a lot where somebody's like, I'm more of a Marvel person. I'd like to check out, you know, DC and what do I read? And you're like, think of, you know, the new 52 stuff. A lot of it's really continuity oriented and we're not enjoying a bunch of it. So I'm just thinking, what should I recommend other than, you know, the milestone kind of stuff? This is something I, you know, would easily recommend to just about anybody.
Yep.
It's like, why do you love, you know, the DC universe? I think this is an example of what we like.
Exactly. So check that out. Black Canary and Zatanna Blood Spell. That's an OG. It's in hardcover right now. I'm sure there'll be a soft cover soon enough.
And especially if people like the, you know, the 90s stuff, the Batman animated series and all the stuff that came out of that, you'll go head over heels for this.
So check that out. Now, Josh, do you want to read the email and get it in under the wire?
Let's do that. Adam from Indiana says, my understanding of DC's new 52, end quotes, is that it refers at least ostensibly to the number of titles being published and also to the number of Earths in the multiverse. It recently occurred to me that it might also be the number of issues we'll get in a reboot. assuming publishing schedule continues on par with previous years, will reach issue number 52 of the remaining first wave books in May of 2016. This date also marks the release of Dawn of Justice. It's coincidental, but still auspicious timing, and you'd expect something appropriately monumentous from DC, would you? If you were threatened with rebar and forced to, that's not okay.
Not cool. Not cool.
Forced
not
to choose. Cool. Not cool. How would each of you like to see DC proceed? Continue with issue 53 in the current reality, pre-boot. I like that term.
Pre-boot.
Back to the old continuity. Retro-boot back to the pre-crisis era, or re-reboot where they actually wipe the slate clean this time. This is good work from.
I feel like Adam has like a wall with a lot of string. Let us know and push pins and things, which I think is awesome.
He's just sitting around drinking, looking at the board.
It was a flat circle.
And it's a tiny little mirror just big enough for one eye. Yeah.
Tuesday is drinking DC day.
It's certainly some interesting timing on that, although
is interesting.
I don't think any of that is planned. From what I know, and I mentioned this sort of from what I know, this is here to stay. Mm-hmm. I've heard nothing to change that since the last time I talked to someone who would know things, that the New 52 continuity is not going anywhere as far as I know. Now, that was a good 6 months ago, and a lot can change at that time, but it is interesting timing. I don't know why they keep calling the New 52, though, on the covers.
Because it's there. It's like when Ron used to get upset about, what was it, 1 year later.
Right. But the thing is, like, at a certain point, it becomes just the continuity. And if you're keeping it on there, it implies that there's another continuity that – do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was thinking about this recently. I was like, is there 52 books? Are they still maintaining that?
I don't know, actually. I'm not going to say no.
Because seriously, like, there, I remember when, like, previews would come out and there were people tracking that. Like, right. Okay, and they're probably, since they canceled this, they're probably going to announce, you know, 2-3
more
books.
Comic fans don't hold you to your word, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, but at this point, I haven't heard that in a while. Like, you know, people keeping track of it. And I don't know if that's just, you know, different books and like, does this count as a new 52 or whatever. But yeah, so it's – well, how about what do we want?
What do you want, Paul?
Okay, so when we get to 52, what do I hope happens next?
Yeah, all those choices.
Not 53. So stay the course. No, pre-boot. I mean, I don't like. What is that? Like, what? I mean, like, how do you
pre-boot
would
be? Pre-boot would be just, you know, this timeline gets wiped away. I mean, you know, Flash wakes up, and you know, it was all a dream.
Here's my thing. I don't want the Newhart ending. You know, or the Dallas thing with Patrick Duffy in the shower. And right. Explaining that this was all I think it's too formal for me.
I don't literally mean that. I just mean, like, you know, you go back to where it was at that point in when the Flashpoint went off.
Even that I think is too formal. Like, I just let people tell the stories that they want. I don't like, and I know that this, like, they would never go for that. But I just let Paul Dini tell these stories. Let Jeff Johns tell the stories he wants. And if they don't mesh up exactly, then. You can do an editor's note or something and say this happened before this, you know, like just tell, you know, tell the best Batman story, tell the best Superman story, tell the best Black Canary story, and don't worry about what they're doing next door.
Josh, which one do you want?
It's a version of that. And it's just stop forcing this world down our throats. Go back to how it was before. Don't try to explain it away. Don't make it into an event. Just gradually, like they're doing in the Superman issue, that was the pick of the week that we talked about at the beginning of the show, just move it towards whatever. Like the idea was to bring in all these new people. I don't know that panned out over the long term.
You mean
it feels like
teams or
no
or characters?
No, creative teams were exactly the same people. Audience.
Oh, new people.
The idea was to, like, this was too confusing for everyone, so we're going to start it over. And that was bullshit. You know, it's the same people buying it. It's the same people. So why not? I mean, to me, the draw of these characters is the tradition, is the history of it, is the established but also evolving characters of them, you know, and make that be what we're reading. Just stop, take the stupid costumes off, and just like make Ollie Queen who Ollie Queen was, make him the cranky old Mike. I mean, I totally sound like one of those like, just give it back to me the way I had it. But I feel like that was more successful. Editorially.
It seems to be this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Story wise. I don't know. I have no idea what's happening with sales. I just mean from a creative standpoint, the books that are always the best, the ones that feel the least encumbered, are the ones who are just sort of telling their story and not worrying so much about, you know, like making like shoehorning this new world. And it's funny because it's been long enough now, I don't really remember the difference between a lot of it. I mean, basically, Batman was a straight line through. I didn't read Flash or anything like that, but
yes or no. But we also deal with the constant problem of all the Robins and all that stuff trying to be shoehorned into 5 years and all the different events that, you know, like this week we had Secret Origins, which, you know,
I read that and it was stupid.
Right. But the point is, like, you know, if you read the Hal Jordan one, it's, and then there was the Lantern one, like all the stuff has,
it wasn't stupid because of what it was. I was just like, you're telling these origins again?
Well, that's like, what Secret Origins does.
It's a time-honored
book. But the point is
absolutely.
That
but you do it with characters and stuff, or not Green Lantern and Bat. Like I was like, oh, this is a capsule review of what Greg Rucka wrote for Batwoman.
Yeah, that's I skipped that one completely. But the point is, they didn't actually reboot, and it just made it stupid in terms of so you're saying all of the previous history happened in the last 5 years, but didn't. And that was what really annoyed me. And I
like, get away from that. There's that thing that we used to talk about, you know, when people would be like, well, it doesn't make sense if you look at Batman in terms of time. It's just so stop worrying about that. It doesn't matter. Well,
and it happened in Superman if you looked at the wall of papers. So we had the death and return of Superman happened in this 5 years. And who cares? Because he was
they're trying to stick
years.
To this explanation of how things work because they feel like people need it. And I feel like that is antithetical to what comic books should be doing.
Yes. Right.
And it was all unearned too. But anyway, if I was to choose, I would actually reboot it with an actual wipe of the slate clean and not try to pretend like everything still happened, but didn't happen. And just
in fairness, I think the Superman, you know, the whole Doomsday thing, the rebirth and everything, that was established as part of the New 52 and Swamp Thing number one.
Oh no, I'm saying we knew that from the very beginning. We knew that Superman and death happened. We knew the crisis happened. We knew that Joker shot back Barbara. I mean, all those things. They wanted to have their cake and eat it too, and they just ended up making a big muddled mess of everything. Anyway, I would reboot it for real. And I don't think anything's going to happen. I think it's going to get issue 53. But that's just me guessing. I don't know anything.
I want them to go back to the original numbers.
Wow, you are becoming like a comic fan in your old age.
No, I mean, like if you're talking about DC, it's like the longest stand. Like that was so cool. When I was a kid, I know that's probably not the same. But when I was a kid, I thought that was so cool. Like I'm reading Detective Comics 700, and I would do the math and just be like, wow.
It's almost like Ron infused you with his DNA when he walked out the door and slowly starting to assert itself over you.
Maybe. No,
how did he infuse you?
Well, that was the kind of thing that he used to complain about. But the same, like I think that's a really, it doesn't matter what you do in the book, but keep that number on the outside. Like you don't renumber 2000 AD. They're on like, you know, they're in the thousands. Like we got jacked on you know, Detective Comics 1000. I was waiting for that when I was 11. And it was right there. Hitler was upset about it too.
Yeah, on the August 2014 issue of Superman.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. So in May 2016, we'll find out what happens. But I don't think anything's going to happen. At least as far as I know right now, things could change.
I think that what will happen, I don't know when. I don't know that it will coincide with anything. But I think eventually you're going to see a sweeping editorial change of some kind, is my guess. Hopefully don't shut down the whole shop.
Well, I caveat mine saying that's assuming everyone's still in charge who's in charge now. If suddenly everyone gets to boot, then anything can happen.
If I'm a new guy who comes in and I'm taking over and saying, what should I do? I'm totally going back to what – I'm going back to the old numbering. They're coming out.
It depends
on
what Diane Nelson tells you to do. But also – I mean, also,
I know, but maybe she gets moved on to the Hobbit finance division. I don't know. You know, like that's what I'd do.
Well, but we'll see.
I want there to be pyro, and then the door falls down, and then Mark Waid walks through and gets to do whatever he wants.
I would vote for that before any presidential election.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, but not right now because it's not working. Our the service we used for our contact email, not our personal emails, but our contact email, went down this week, and it's going out of business. So we have yet to figure out what we're doing next.
And to be honest, my personal email is a little bit it's pretty much jacked at this point, too.
So right now, if you email contact@ifanboy.com, no one will get your email. It'll just go into the ether and never come out again. So
if you have a quick question, you can tweet it.
So the point is, if you've emailed us in the last week, you might want to, you know, hold on to that in your drafts and do it again when we fix it, because we have not seen it. So right now we have about 700 unread messages in our box there. So I don't know what's going to happen. Stay tuned on that. We may not have audience questions for a while. We'll see how that goes.
You can post them on our Facebook wall.
Yeah, for now you can do that. Yes, for now you can post your questions on our Facebook wall. If you've emailed us in the last week, you can post those there. We'll draw our questions from there. You can also still call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY, 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep around 30 seconds. That still works for now.
Just don't make it 2.7 megabytes long, because then we won't listen to it.
You were wrong on the other number. It's 638 is the other number. That's
638. Zero. No. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you say 468?
Yeah, 638.
Okay, again, head over. We're losing them. Let's just
head over to fanboy.com. Come on this show. Talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts. We don't have any special edition shows coming up soon, but then after July, you'll have a whole bunch happening. So keep your eye out for those coming to fanboy.com.
You can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy. You can put questions there, but it's limited because you don't have a lot of space. Facebook.com/iFanboy, as we said. You can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, or Fuzzy Typewriter on the Twitter. We're there frequently.
Yeah, and if you dig this kind of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Tell people, you got 4th of July parties coming up. Tell the people, can you tell things in fireworks?
Can. It's cumbersome. It's not. It's definitely not the most efficient way.
I'm not saying break into like a fireworks factory or whatever.
You want to spell things out in the sky? Is that what you want?
Yeah, I'm saying. Yeah.
You could launch a lot of fireworks, and then everybody sort of turns around, and then you say, "Now that I've got your attention."
Exactly.
that's fine. I agree with that.
Do that. Don't set anything on fire.
Safety first, everyone.
Safety first.
No. And if fireworks are illegal in your state or municipality, we don't endorse you doing that.
I do endorse your use of the word municipality, though.
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to go somehow try to get Nelson out of my head.
Oh, it was gone. Now it's back. I can tell you one thing. People at the beginning of the show are going to wonder why that was the song. And by the end, they'll be angry.
Like normal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I am Joshua Flanagan. Thank you for attending. Who are the voices? This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for
no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.